I brought a couple of things to show you guys for scale, so I do have a couple of things making noise up here. My name is Lauren Crawford. I'm with Decagon. I'm the soil moisture product manager, so that's really my expertise. I'm going to show some of the sensors we have for canopy measurements as well, just with the caveat that I might not have all of the answers to your questions on those. So a little bit about Decagon. Just out there, who has heard of Decagon before in here? Who has used our soil moisture sensors? That's probably what we're most known for. This is about our 15 year of making soil moisture sensors this year. And we were started about 15 years ago by Galen Campbell, who is still an environmental biophysicist. We're located in Pullman, Washington, which is also the location of Washington State University, and we also now have offices in Brazil and France. So our main goal at Decagon is to be in close contact with you, the researcher, to do fast iteration and customer-centric designs, really just be able to give you what you need based on some rapid feedback. Rapid being a relative term. I'm sure if you've been talking to Mark Van Eersel at all this trip, he said we are not as rapid as we should be right now, and that's true with the new plant point system. So I'm going to go through, we've done a lot in the past handful of years, and I'm just going to go give a brief overview of some of our newer products. So if you're interested in what we've been doing over the course of the last 10 years, please come down and I'll give you an overview. And also feel free to interrupt me if you have questions about anything that I'm talking about. And we'll start out with the soils tools. So this is just a basic data set of soil moisture. If you've never seen soil moisture data, these are the types of data that we collect with the sensors. In horticulture applications, these are primarily used to monitor and schedule irrigation. We're starting to use these sensors to control irrigation in greenhouses and nurseries. That's really the next step. But I just wanted to at least show you a data set. So with this data set in particular, you have an irrigation event, and you see the values go up to a peak and a steeper slope followed by a more gradual slope. Essentially, we use these patterns to determine a full point and a refill point, and that's how we decide when we're going to irrigate. And this application, this is actually from a site that Kelly Morgan worked on, if you guys saw his talk. It's from a long time ago in citrus trees, but in this site in particular, they had sensors over various depths, and when you're doing that, you can actually see where your water, if you're having infiltration past your root zone. So a lot of different applications, seeing if you have infiltration past your root zone, and also just monitoring within the root zone. Okay, this is kind of an important step for us, so I wanted to show you a little bit of these are traditional Decagon sensors. These are a circuit board material, and if you've been familiar with Decagon at all over the past 15 years, this is what we started with, this is what we've been known for, and we've made iterations based on the circuit board material. The direction we're going is to the stainless steel and epoxy design. It's the same technology to measure soil moisture as we've been doing for the past, 9 years. It's just in a more rugged package. The price is actually the same. The iterations are just to make this a sensor that lasts longer in the soils. We've also integrated electrical conductivity into these measurements as well. I'll talk about a little bit about that work as well. The other area that we do a lot of work in soils is measuring soil water potential. We do sell tensiometers from a company called UMS, but the where we've done our research is really trying to perfect this porous matrix design. And so this is what these water potential sensors look like in terms of shape. Essentially, there's a ceramic disc, and we are measuring the water content of the ceramic disc. We create a moisture release curve of these ceramic discs, and we assume that the water potential of the soil is coming into equilibrium with the disc. This is a common assumption. And so if we know the water content, we can extrapolate to the water potential of the soil. So the iterations of this over time, the MPS-1 was our first sensor. I think we came out with this about 8 years ago. It had about a plus or minus 40% accuracy, which is makes a lot of it makes me cringe when I see that. But no one else was reporting inaccuracy for these types of measurements, so 40 was better than nothing, essentially. Water potential measurements are really difficult to do in the soil. This sensor alone took us about 10 years, and Galen had been working on this even before he started Decagon. And so this was a really exciting time for us, even though it was plus or minus 40%. The second generation of this, we got a little bit better by having a two-point calibration, got us down to about 25%. Still not great, but a step up. Now with the MPS-6, which is the one I brought with me, this is a six-point calibration. We've gotten that accuracy down to 10%. The cool thing about these sensors, in my opinion, is that they go down to about 100,000 kilopascals soil water potential, and that's incredible for water potential readings. And when you're doing any deficit irrigation in the soil, to be able to read down there, to see soil on a sensor get down to negative 500 kilopascals is really cool and really fun to watch. So if you are measuring, if you're interested in understanding what's going on in a deficit irrigation situation, these are really, it's a really fun sensor. It's a really fun data set to have. This is just a calibration data set for these. Okay, so the other direction we've moved, and a lot of this is as a result of our cell phones getting cheaper and the parts out there getting less expensive, so us in the research community can really take advantage of the components out there. Our data loggers now have become cellular, where they're transmitting, using existing infrastructure of cell towers to transmit data to the internet. I won't go into this too much except to say that these options are getting really inexpensive, and that's a benefit to us as researchers. What I mentioned before, us moving in this direction of control of irrigation systems, this is when we heard about that. I mean, everybody said for years since I started at Decagon, but have you thought of controlling irrigation with soil moisture? And well, yeah, of course we had, and it seemed like kind of an easy problem when we thought of it. You know, a simple if-then statement. If the soil gets to this level, you turn on some irrigation, and then you turn it off once it gets to another value. And that is the easy part. The difficult part is which sensor, which value do you use? Do you use an average? What happens if the sensor gets pulled out of the soil? Does it irrigate until the whole place floods? What's going to happen there? So everything behind that small if-then statement is what we're working on to get this system out. And so this was funded by a SCRI grant that ended about, what, Andrew, 2 years ago? And that was 5 years. Our role as the commercial partner was to commercialize the work that came out of that system. I'm not going to talk about a time that's coming out anymore because that's bitten me during the past 2 years, but we're getting closer, and it's very exciting. Our lead engineer on that just wrote me today and said, well, I've got control going on this, so we're at the very end. So, John, you asked about that earlier. Todd wrote me afterwards. He's got control working now on the firmware, and I told you that wasn't done yet, so there you go. From a research perspective, one of the things we're keenly interested in is understanding what to do with soil EC data. This is something that it should be on everyone's mind as an irrigator. No one's irrigating with Very few of us are lucky to be irrigating with clean water anymore. And so if you're irrigating at all with saline water, or water, even tap water, you're going to get some salt buildup in the soil. We're committed to measuring that, and we can measure a bulk EC value. That value isn't very meaningful right now. And there's a handful of people in the world that are trying to figure out how to convert that bulk EC to a value that's meaningful, the electrical conductivity of the water in the soil. And so this is an area that we're working. I do have a poster downstairs that talks specifically about the work that we're doing in this area, trying to model those poor water EC values. And that work is coming along well, and that's something that we plan to integrate into the data coming out of the sensors. Okay, a couple of hydrology tools. Not a lot of you will use these, so I'm not going to spend too much time on these. We do have a sensor that measures water depth, water EC, and water temperature. It's got about a 1 millimeter resolution. That's really what sets this sensor apart, is that 1 millimeter resolution. Some of the applications for this, we do have some folks that are monitoring this in greenhouse runoff, but this is primarily an industrial application. One thing that we're competing in actually this week is a nitrate sensor. There's an EPA competition right now to create an inexpensive in-situ nitrate sensor, and that's something that Decagon's been working on for the past handful of years. And this week we took our prototype to measure in-situ nitrate. The goal was that the sensor had to be less than $2,000. And so that no one's doing this right now. It's such a strong need that the EPA has put out a call for a competition. And so we're making headway there. We're using a multispectral absorption method to tease out the nitrate from other things that might interfere with that signal, including dissolved organic carbon. So this is just an implementation picture. I'm going to rush since I don't have too much time up here. Okay, a couple of canopy tools. There's been a handful of talks on these so far. I think that the people that are using these instruments have a lot more interesting things to say than I do about them. So I'd encourage, if you missed those talks by the University of Georgia groups, I can get you that information. So the new sensors we have in this past couple of years are these spectral reflectance sensors. This is just the size. I wanted to give you guys an idea of the size of these. We're measuring NDVI, normalized difference vegetation index, as well as photochemical reflectance index. The PRI index is not one that's widely used right now by a lot of researchers, but it's a rapid response within minutes. That gives some, well, we're still learning about the indications of the plant that it's telling us, but there are functional properties in there that change the PRI. So that's what that sensor is used for. This is just a general slide about how we're calculating NDVI. This is a common measurement. This is not something that Decagon is. I think the sensor technology making this inexpensive, that was our contribution to this side. NDVI itself is not a new measurement, but the ability to collect this in a widespread perspective is fairly novel right now. We'll skip this. We already talked a little bit about this. And that's all I had today, and I know I rushed through that. I went through that pretty quickly. We're growing fast enough that we have a lot of these things coming out pretty quickly. So, any questions? All right.
I have one quick question.
Sure.
A colleague that I work with went to the store and saw these things at the office, the orchard supply.
Uh-huh.
That you put in your potted plants,
mm-hmm.
and it tells you when to water them, and it zooms the thing to your phone and gives mm-hmm. you information. What's the error rate on those?
The error is in how accurate are they?
The water measurement. They don't go down very deep.
You know, there's a lot, And Mark, you might be able to talk to that. There's a lot of soil moisture sensors. If you go on eBay, you can get some for $4. I would say they're not waterproof. I would say we've tested a handful of these just out of interest of what, you know, if you can get a really accurate sensor for $15, that's awesome. I mean, that's going to really take us a long way. And we're trying to get that price down without compromising the lifespan of the sensor. What we've found is they're very good water depth sensors, in terms of, and they might be okay with telling you on a house plant to turn on or off. I wouldn't rely on it 100%, but we've found them to be fairly decent water depth sensors from just basic testing. John?
They don't stay calibrated. I think it's the biggest issue. So the sensor is it a different technology that doesn't have those issues, or how
that's
going to pan out?
That's a good question, John. And I can't remember how we resolved that. I think that it either does. I think it has a solution in that case. Let me see if I could go back to it. I could be wrong about this. One of those spectrums is to check the calibration. So we run that. You could see in that those different wavelengths, that reference wavelength. There's nothing that should be interfering with that wavelength, and that's what we use as a check. I'm not sure how we resolve the calibration issue if you have to run just deionized water through it. But I know that was a big concern. I'm just not sure how they resolved it. I'll check for you, though, and get back to you. Yes? This is for liquid. So this would be something that you would maybe put at a tile drain or at a location in a stream, somewhere where you had flowing water. It's a sensor that assumes that you're going to have water flowing past, liquid water. It is a continuous, but it assumes you've got water flowing past the sensor area. All right, thank you.